Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season 3, episode 9, titled Coming Home. Aaron, this is the one where I guess you just win the internet this week. And I don't fucking know how, because it's the craziest turn of fate I've ever seen. But
did I? Because I don't remember being a big proponent of the.
I thought you were like
Korea not.
I thought you were all about it with like the single.
Was I
single man? Kamikaze.
I think I read an email intimating that, and okay. I guess I was the avatar of that, and we all collectively willed it into reality.
This is insane.
Because.
Right?
When we got to the end, my son and I were watching this. We got to the end. It delighted my son. My son thought this was the most awesome twist ever. I'm a little older. I'm a little bit more measured. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh my God, did this show just jump the shark?
Yes.
I don't think this is, it's too premature. Like even when you're watching Fonzie hit the ramp and jump over those sharks, it was too quick in that moment to judge whether Happy Days had jumped a shark.
Right.
It's only in retrospect. But if Fault for All Mankind is jumping the shark, this would be an exhibit, I think, because and this is my first blush. You know, obviously we're watching this before everybody else gets a chance to see it. It could be that Ron Moore has crunched the numbers and he's calculated how many high C packets you can cram in there and how much dehydrated meals and et cetera, water. And you could do something like this. But this is fucking nuts. This is fucking nuts that they sent a guy in an unmanned probe. They sent one guy, and he's been living on Mars for six to eight months.
Uh-huh, somewhere in there. And what's the purpose of it? Like, I know the purpose is to hit Mars before anybody else does and claim that glory, but they never claimed the glory.
They don't claim the glory, yeah.
It's the crazy part. Like, they never told the news, hey, by the way, we've already got a guy on Mars. And he's up there with a gun right now.
It's very unlike the Ill family to not claim credit for doing something legitimately awesome and audacious. No, I don't know what to make of it. I thought up until the boot marks that the North Korean thing's going to pay off because they're going to do a Mark Watney and they're going to drive across and grab this critical Soviet era part. And they're going to like, that's going to be something cool that they cobble together. And like, of course they set that up earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nutso things happening in this episode. Relatively speaking, a sitting president of the United States came out as secretly gay with her. Wow. No longer secretly gay husband. That mm-hmm. there's been a full on top down the takeover, which dealing with the political fallout of that's going to be interesting. The last scene of last episode was a little bullshit because they set up this dramatic conflict about like in Soviet Russia, pregnancy has you. And no, the Soviets are all cool with it. They're like, you know, skeptical that this is smart, like a lot of people are. And there's a lot of challenges, but there's no like international relations incident. That felt like a bullshit cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, and this episode is weird because it's 47 minutes long, so it's a lot shorter than most of the episodes this season and way shorter than the next one. So it feels like, you know, this was a
cut for pace
episode.
Yeah.
And trying to get everything where they needed to be, and they just needed to take some big leaps.
Which happens. we talked about that. Other shows, like, because I kept on thinking. There was a couple things like this week, last week's episode, I should say, of Westworld, and this week's episode For All Mankind got me thinking of like whenever we've taken a stab at writing some fiction things. And whenever we get to a part where it's like, ah, fuck, this doesn't make sense, we just kind of stop. Like, well, this is an irreducible problem. I feel like a lot of great Hollywood projects just rough ride over those moments because they know everything else is solid and people will go along with it if you nail everything else and you have to ask them to make maybe one big leap. So, like, again, this is not fatal. It's just
sure.
It is a big leap. It's huge.
Yeah.
One giant leap for all Mankind fans to take. And we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. The Danny stuff is still in play, which, you know, it had to be, right? But it's been festering for 5 months, and that stuff's going to be interesting now that the official reports.
I will
come
take
back.
A little credit for that. That, like, I'm glad that it wasn't Ed or Danny's idea, but him, you know, Nick taking the fall for this operation and it having pretty predictable effects on Danny. I thought that was a pretty good payoff.
They left that in a nowhere zone too for 5 months. Like, you know, that Danny right before they were saved in this earthquake, you know, unburied them. Was saying to Ed, I have something important I have to tell you. There's one big confession I need to make. And Ed never follows up on that. Never. And I don't know if that's because he was in like some days of like blood loss and barely understood hypoxic.
That's entirely possible. But I also think
they just
it's
don't even
very
address it, right? It's just like another false cliffhanger.
I'm going to wait until next episode because it's because my thought was Ed thinks that what he's about to do is confess to it being his fault. The entire, like, I was super fucking high and I let my hand off the ball. And like Ed, in kind of like Ed's psychology mode, is like, oh, no, you know, like,
yeah, it's tough though.
Doesn't want him to acknowledge that here. Or
the big problem is they skip 5 months. And so all of these things that were big cliffhangers in the last episode and important are just kind of backburnered for 5 months.
And I do feel like
to see any of the resolutions to those.
I feel like this show has done very well on their jump forwards because it's not like this is the first time the show has jumped forward, even in seasons. But yeah, they're like they've had to jump forward multiple years and significant fractions of years, like three, maybe four times this season. And it's like a spaceship being spun too fast. Things aren't buttoned down enough to do that. So
yeah. If they had left it in a place where I believe 5 months could go by and nothing would have really changed, or they had missions that were like, you know, more important. And sure, digging out the MSAM, all that stuff, repairing it, it's important. But also, they set up a few big things and didn't knock them down.
And they could have done. They had enough time last episode for Ed to come up and be like, hey, look, I know what you want to talk about. And Danny could be like, hey, Ed. And he's like, look, it doesn't matter whose fault it was. All we have to do is concentrate. We got to, and like, you know, keep it like, I think that'd be consistent with both their characters. It would increase the tragedy for Danny and increase the pressure on him. And we wouldn't be having this conversation.
And in this episode, you have the crew find out, right? And then it becomes an issue again. But
they
didn't have that scene. So it felt like it was a loose end. But, you know, it's an okay episode. I don't want to say like, oh, this is, you know, jumping the shark or it's a bad episode. I still enjoyed it. It's just,
for sure.
Reasons.
It is. And I'll go back to what I said in the pilot episode, which, you know, I'll stand by. I think that the hallmark of this show thus far is they really sweat these technical details and the character points and all that stuff. And I think in the first episode, I felt like they're playing a little fast and loose with the physics and, you know, some of these things in favor of telling an exciting story. And I feel like they have done that now on the character side a bit, which I didn't see in the first two episodes, first two seasons. Of course, granted, the first two seasons we kind of covered as just fans, like, you know, we watched it and we were kind of talking about it a little bit on OTC. But like, I know it changes scrutinizing a show, watching it multiple times, getting people's feedback, you know, paying attention to what people. So like it could be that like maybe these things were always there and I just didn't pick up on it. But like I think there's a little bit of a again, it's not fatal. I'm not saying this thing's jumping a shark. I'm just saying if the show has jumped a shark, we can point to a couple things and be like, here are the ramps. Those are the fins in the water. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say this is the worst episode probably of another very good season for All Mankind, which is not to say it's a bad episode. It's just the weakest.
Yeah. Like 90% of it is still good. It's just like 10% that sticks out to me like a sore thumb. Now, I imagine if you were like a huge, you know, PRK astronaut fan theory, that you were like pumping your fist and be like, fucking, I knew it. But for all the rest of us who had already considered that theory, like, come on, what is this show? You got up. Nah, it's wild. Cause like you guys are, the pro Korean astronaut side is probably really elated and the anti is probably double deflated because they'd already thought it's dumb. And now here it's happening. And the show doesn't have time to defend itself. Cause like, again,
sure,
we could have like a news montage that explains this whole thing. And it as is. And the thing is like, just because it's possible doesn't mean it's probable. Like this could have been a 1 in 1,000 shot and everything went right. As far as like just even, you know, landing something on Mars, they've established as difficult. But you do this with a fully functional support system. And this guy has been there probably. So, yeah, I need to see more. And fortunately, we have a near 90 minute episode next week that could answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's a long one. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it had some great high spots, too. I think like the best stuff to me in this episode was when Ellen comes out to the public and the aftermath of that with Will and Roland, I thought was like, that got me choked up. That was incredible character moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And it felt earned, you know, because the time jumps were they were carefully paced to allow us to, you know, have the very beginning, like Roland's knee jerk reactionary stance on Will being gay to them being forced to work together and kind of rebuild that esprit de corps. And then finally, you know, with this big moment of the American president kind of going to bat for him, Roland, you know, coming back around to being honored to be his friend. I was choked up for that, too.
Yeah. Some
power. Because the guy playing Will nailed it, too. Like I felt like that's exactly how that guy would react in that situation where he's so happy, but he's also kind of on the spot and vulnerable with everybody looking at him and talking about it. Like at the high, like, you know, he didn't, when he was a little boy and he dreamed to go into space, he did not intend to be an international lightning rod for gay rights, right?
No,
not at all. And, you know, he's being forced to live through this. And it seems like it's both something that's super happy. It's super mortifying. And I felt like he nailed all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Highlight of the episode for me.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, why don't we get into the recap?
Yeah, let's come home.
We start off with a little montage here of Danny sending a message to his wife about the progress on getting off of Mars. And they're digging out the MSAM. And then it's 5 months later and Danny's working on fixing up the MSAM. And we see that Kelly's significantly more pregnant. Her and Ed talk about the baby's name and then the doctor examines her and Ed gets to hear the baby kicking, which is a moment for him.
I think that's the baby's heartbeat. If that's the baby kicking, then okay. God help Kelly. Because, yeah,
That's
it's keeping some fucking a metronome going in there.
Huh.
I thought that I've talked before about being perplexed about why everyone's worried about the methane fuel, because I thought that they were kind of doing the Robert Zubrin's plan for Mars, but if Endeavor or Sojourner was all nuclear, maybe it doesn't need methane. Maybe it didn't have a methane lab going and separating, you know, the various oxygen and other organic stuff on Mars into methane. So maybe they are in a pinch, but they made this analogy I thought was cool about it's like trying to fill a jetliner with a soda can. You know, that they've lost their main lab and they're trying to make as much as possible. And they also have to, I guess they can only make one trip. They're going to have enough fuel for one trip. It's going to be an ultra heavy load because they're going to have to cram everybody into this MSAM that looks like the size of, what would you say? Like a minivan?
Sure. That sounds right.
Maybe a cargo van. But when you look at the MSAM, when everybody's in it, it's fucking packed with people. So. Yeah. And I was also thought it was interesting how pessimistic the Helios people were about anyone ever going back to Mars in their lifetime. Like, this is fucked so bad that nobody is ever going to do it.
Yeah, that's it. This episode is a kind of showcase for the short-sightedness of humanity. You know, the Helios board talking about stock prices and shit when Dev is looking at it as a dreamer coming up with, you know, civilizations on Mars, right? He's thinking hundreds of years in the future. They're thinking next week when the fucking right. earnings reports come in. It's a joke. And then you look at some of the stuff with Ellen, where the who is this guy, Dick? I don't exactly.
I think
know
it's
who he is. A congressman, maybe.
Yeah, no, I think he's supposed to be Dick Gephardt, who was the House Majority Leader.
Okay.
Up until Nancy, like he was a Minority Leader up until Nancy Pelosi, who has held the position for God over almost 20 years now, I think.
But he's telling her, you know, don't think about like the Mars or the NASA program, you know, going into the future hundreds of years or even 5 years. Think of your election cycle, right? It's like this short-sightedness everywhere on humanity's side that keeps us, holds
Dude,
us back
that
from
was,
doing great things, right?
That was one of the interesting points that Zubrin made in his book about the case for Mars, about like his hypothesis is we never would have gone to the moon once the Soviets, if the Soviets had pulled out of the space race. And even then, it was kind of amazing because That was JFK's project, and he got assassinated in the middle of his dream, and all of America kind of like was beholden. Like, it would be a bad look if you canceled Robert, you know, like JFK's like last dream and, you know, this challenge he put before America. Mm-hmm. And at any other period of time, it's like, if it takes 10 years to do something in NASA and the average American president who is presiding over is going to be 4 to 8 years.
Yeah.
It's really tough to get that continuity look because, like, the predecessor that takes over has very little, you know, like what he's going to bring over the finish line, his predecessor's baby. Whereas it's always like you could just cut this and save billions of dollars and look like a hero and say, and you've always got the, well, we've got problems on Earth. We can't spend trillions. Of, exactly what it Dick Gephardt was saying here.
Yeah, it always seems like something that we don't need to do.
Yeah, which I guess is the hope of private space flight. But then on the other hand, you've got this where like corporations have to turn a profit. They have a fiduciary duty to the shareholders.
Yeah, the motives are totally different.
To generate profit now, not later now. And if you're ever not doing that, they can sue you for not living up to your duty to the shareholders. So it's a real bind we got to get the to get to the next level in interplanetary space flight.
Yeah. Yeah, or any or really anything big. I mean, you look at the energy production change that's taken place, right? And then you've got a lot of people, as he says, living in homeless camps, and these are former coal mining workers, former oil workers, all these people who were producing energy now don't have jobs. Well, A, it's your responsibility to give them the support they need, motherfucker. But B, this is the pain of change. This is the pain of progress.
Right.
And it's not comforting. It's not going to help the people to just tell them like, well, you're the cost of doing business. You're the cost of progress. So take comfort in the fact that you helped us get there. That's not going to put food in their mouths or a roof over their head. But it's necessary. You know, it's clearly necessary in certain cases, especially in the energy production arena. So
I agree.
It's so short-sighted, right? Just like all these petty issues that get in the way of progress.
But they also, they're from the, looking at from the other side, it does make a certain amount of sense that like, well, if we have poor people, people are hungry, people are starving here on Earth, why are we spending money on to put people on a dead planet? Like, I don't agree with that, but like it is a perennially compelling line of argument.
An easy argument to fall into.
Yeah. And I think on the other side, you know, that's we have to take it up the mantle of like, we have to have good arguments to respond to that, because it's not like you can just be like, well, fuck you, Luddite. It's like, well, you know, then you're going to have a whole bunch of Wilsonvilles spread out all over America, tent cities and such. And that's going to, you know, people aren't going to put up with that for very long.
Yeah.
I thought they did a really good job of establishing the stakes for Kelly's pregnancy for people that might not know, the fact that there's elevated, you know, Mars has no Van Allen belt, no magnetic sphere to protect itself from the violent radiation coming from the sun. Mm-hmm. It's got 1/3 Earth's gravity, which already people have talked about how that has microgravity, reduced gravity.
Problems. Yeah.
In adults. Let alone a fetus developing in the womb. So they're very, very desperate to get her back to Phoenix, where at least she'll have a full Earth gravity and presumably maybe better shielding even than what those Habs are capable of. So I thought that was and then they got problems like how are they going to fit her into a spacesuit?
I felt like they overplayed the urgency of getting Kelly back up, though. We just don't know the effects, right? It's not like, oh, we have a ticking clock where if we don't get you back up there in a month, you're definitely going to experience like birth defects or death or something like that.
But it's a huge, but I also understand if we don't get you up in a month, we're going to miss your window, and then you're going to have to spend another 18 months.
I mean, one way or another, this thing will sort itself out in another 4 months. So.
What if it ends with a death or deformed child? So let me ask you this.
Sure, that's a possibility.
There's no, please tell me. You know more about Ron Moore's work than I do, because I didn't sit through all of, I bailed on Battlestar after the first season. He's not going to go X-Men with this, right? We're not going to have a Baldwin baby that has ESP.
Oh, no.
Or shit like that. Because I'm telling you, I'm out. If this baby starts having precog shit or some kind of like, there's like, he's like positing another evolution of human. I just want everyone to know that the shark has been jumped for me.
It would definitely be jumped for me. And let me say that is absolutely a part of Battlestar Galactica, but it is.
Fuck.
but it is not going to happen in this show because Battlestar Galactica is a true sci-fi show. Like,
right,
those concepts can be introduced there. It's more of a fantasy. This is more grounded in reality. So
I agree, but the further we get out from the main timeline, the further I think he might be tempted to push the sci-fi throttle.
I think if he were getting into like gene editing stuff or something, he might be willing to go there. But so far, I've seen no hint of that. And I don't think he's going to do straight up fantasy, you know, some mystical space stuff with radiation. I really don't think so.
Okay.
I could be wrong. They landed a North Korean on Mars in a one-man suicide mission. So,
in an unmanned probe on a suicide mission. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, before I saw this episode, I'd be absolutely not. But this on the second watch in particular, as he's saying, oh, you know, the radiation has unknown effects on the infant's development. I'm like, oh, fuck. If they go Fantastic Four on this, I just don't know.
Yeah,
it's going to be clobbering time.
Methane, it breathes methane. It exhales methane, and that's going to solve their fuel problem.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the news talks about Kelly's baby, and Ellen is pressured by a congressman, this Dick guy I was talking before, to sign a bill that would give Congress control over NASA's budget. Ellen says, I'm going to veto this thing if you get it passed. And then in private here, Dick threatens to use the office tape recordings against her, actually against Larry, and then use that scandal to override her veto.
Yeah.
And I think all that stuff tracks politically. It seemed like it could, certainly.
And they brought back, like, you know, this is the three-step Martin reveal. You know, we talked about Carl Rove and his dirty tricks game, his robocalling, and apparently in this world, that just happened an election cycle sooner.
Yeah.
You know, she's being this is high stakes political ransom, essentially. Mm-hmm. To me, this is so stupid that Ellen has got all of the nation's energy employed, like bottom line, frontline blue collar energy workers out of work and living in homeless camps. To me, this is like there's got to be money. There's got to be money earmarked to where you could give these people a soft cushion so you don't have these optically, like if it's a good thing. And I do think it's a good thing that we've essentially solved, you know, humanity's energy problems have been solved.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's undeniably good.
It's undeniably good. Well, if our energy problems are solved, there's got to be just a tremendous amount of wealth being generated and divert some of that from the goddamn pockets of corporations and put it into social programs that give these people a future besides the street in the wealthiest, most powerful country in the world. Happens all the fucking time. And it's something that, you know, you and I have been talking a lot in terms of automation. Like, you think that the coal miners have gotten their bitch on in those last 20 years. That's an industry that employs like 80 to 100,000 people. When we automate like trucks and driving, you're talking about 3.5 million people that derive their livelihood from an industry that's going to go away in our lifetimes.
Yeah. No, these problems
are very real. As far as I can tell, There is no plan to deal with that looming problem. And all the other things are going to happen because automation, which are undeniably good. It's better to have robots driving these fucking trucks than people that are, you know, up 18 hours a day and taking speed. It's better to have warehouses full of robots packing things than people holding their piss and pissing in bottles and dying of heat exhaustion during the increasingly hot summers. It's just we have to have a plan to deal with the people, to get them from the world we're living now to the world we want to live into tomorrow. And
100%. And I think
this is super realistic, very frustrating to see it depicted on the show.
Extremely frustrating. Yeah. And my opinion is you need to give them options. You can't just say, well, we're going to, you know, your job is going away and you have this like education option that you can take.
Right.
And if you don't take that, well, you're screwed.
Right.
I think there have to be other options. There have to be, you know, a lot of the times this would have been done by private corporations, though we've transformed, you know, trucking into something that isn't an employer thing. It's now a contract worker thing, essentially, in most cases. And so those people have nothing to fall back on. They don't have a pension. They don't have any kind of soft landing that has been built into the system that they were in.
Right.
So now they don't even guarantee
healthcare because it's tied to employment so often. Uh-huh. It's a real sticky wicket. And I agree, because like I think that when politicians do think in terms of like, well, we're going to these people, it's like, oh, well, we'll have an educational voucher that's good for 6 credits at a community college. But only if you make between $19,000 and $31,000, and only if
how does that help me if
more,
I'm 60 years old? If I've been driving a truck for 35 years and suddenly
I'm going to live for another 15 to 20 to 25. Yeah, no, it's a fig leaf. It's so they can say we did something rather than, you know, and also puts the blame on the person who lost her job because, well, didn't you take advantage of your educational credits? Weren't you able to retool your entire life's work against your will in, you know, 12 to 24 months? And if you didn't, then fuck you.
Yeah, because it's your fault. Wash your hands of these people and then let them just, you know, to their fate. And it sucks.
And I also understand there's a moral hazard in just giving people a ton of free money and stuff as well. Jesus Christ, I feel I'm just acknowledging there's another view. I'm acknowledging there's another viewpoint. But I think that like most fair-minded people, it seems, thinks that the balance is a little bit too far on the other side.
All right, let's move on to Alita. She invites Bill over to take a look at the evidence that she's compiled about who gave the Russians their engine design. And the data is definitely pointing the finger at Margot. And she offers to make this case to Bill if he'll just hang around, sit down and hear her out. And he does.
I did not see Alita and Bill being the new Rust and Marty.
Yep.
From True Detective. Right. You know, I was expecting Bill to get up and be like,
shows him that.
Fuck you, man. Fuck. Yeah. I was expecting one of those, because it's exactly like him taking Marty into his little storage shed of yarn conspiracy. Right. It was.
Come in here and look at my insanity board and tell me I'm not crazy.
I loved it. And I hated where it ended, man. I hated that Alita is against Bill because I think Bill did the right thing. But, you know,
but man, it makes a ton of sense. I don't know. I love this moment because of how much I hate it. You know, it's one of those that's like, God damn it. People.
Yeah. But it was a nice moment, like them sitting in these old folding aluminum lawn chairs as they're drinking long necks out of a bucket. Trying to figure out if Margot actually is the head spy. I thought it's pretty interesting. Oh, that's the other casualty of the all the time skips is like, what the hell happened with Sergei?
He's gone. He's done.
Like that's
he's
gone
Russian
and Margot's forgotten person. About it. And there's no more, no bubbles, no troubles on that. I thought that was a little bit of a rough transition because she was considering a military option or a black ops option or something.
Yeah. But then it was his family, right? And he didn't want them disturbed because
clearly they gotta touch base back on that, right? They can't just.
I don't know.
Well, it was a good, valiant effort because I think Margot might go to jail.
Yeah, I think she's gonna have bigger fish, bigger problems in her future. But yeah, I don't think Sergei is coming back, man. I think he's lost to the Russian. Gulags.
We're gonna have a kicking up forward 10 years montage of them both counting off tally marks of their days. He's in the gulag, she's in Fort Leavenworth, and they're crashing rocks, whatever.
Yep, could be. All right, let's go to Dev explaining to his board the Helios plans to colonize Mars, and the board is pretty reluctant to continue the Mars colonization missions after the landslide accident. And he tells them the story of Jamestown and how they lost, 80% of their population 80%. In the first 3 days, and yet they persevered. But the board doesn't give a shit. They're more concerned about the stock prices than putting humans on Mars, and they've decided to pivot their business back to mining helium-3. And Dev, at the end of this scene, promises to turn things around. And I don't know if this is a turn from him that's like, well, I clearly see that they're not on board with my vision, and if I don't say something like this, I'm going to get fired. Because I think he knows he's in a precarious situation there.
It seems like it. I did I really like the design of Calypso. It looks so much like a Buck Rogers era rocket that I just used. I just couldn't help but be charmed by this thing. And his plan for Mars, having thousands of colonists, a mining operation and spaceport and all. I mean, goddamn, that's a dream for a kid that loves space like myself. Yeah. I did find it. Like, I don't think saying, well, look at Jamestown, where they lost 80% of their colonists in the first 3 years. And, oh, by the way, we'll depopulate this continent of 90% of its native people in the next 100. I don't know that is something that would, like, make the board think that this is something that we personally need to be, you know, involved in.
Right. They need to hear, how does this Mars colonization translate to money? And what he should be talking about is... you know, building the railroads and company towns and like how they're going to fleece everyone involved in setting up the Mars colonization, right? Indentured servitude.
Like, exactly.
Those are the bells you need to be ringing, the points you need to be hitting.
And to her point, like about the short-sightedness of it all.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say, but like if Dev pursues the dream of a Mars colony that I think you and I are in favor of, and he bankrupts the company, and 2 years from now, Helios is just sold for spare parts amongst, you know, for space tourism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, damn, you know, that's the other, like, it's not a matter of committing to the will. It's like, what if it's not possible? What if it's not financially possible?
Well, that's the annoying thing, right? It seems like the mining side of the company, the Helium 3 mining, is awash with cash. It's just that the stockholders won't tolerate tolerate making less money than they could in the short term in order.
But do you not believe Karen? Because Karen's done the spreadsheets and she thinks that the entire company is in danger because of the Mars loss leader. Because that's the thing. It's I guess like all Dev's lackeys on the board, I think that they're up. But like, I don't think Karen... If there was a way to do it with their current financial standings or something, I think she would have presented that rather than, you know, selling the whole thing. And that's why Karen's there, just so we know that maybe the board isn't just, you know, being nervous Nellies about it.
Yeah, no, you're right. But there's got to be some compromise solution. And, you know, I don't know if the stockholders go for it or the board goes for it. But like, OK, maybe you have to take your time and do it a little more slowly and build up your war chest.
But to abandon Mars, it all together.
Yeah, it seems so short-sighted.
Yeah,
but that's our financial system for you. It's extremely short-sighted. All right, let's move on to Ellen and Larry listening to the very incriminating tapes of their office, the Oval Office recordings. They're trying to figure out what to do. They run over a couple solutions here, but Larry's solution is to confess and say that Ellen actually didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I thought this is, you know, like them speed running all the possibilities. Can we essentially lean into the obstruction? Can we fight this legally?
As a viewer, right? I'm like, okay, how do we get out of this? Is there a way to get out of this that doesn't make them bad people? And that's what I'm concerned with as a viewer.
Ellen's taking a long term. Like, you know, the American president might need executive privilege to shield vital national security things from, you know, certain prying eyes in the future. And if we blow this, set this court precedent on your goddamn sex scandal, then that's going to weaken American. Like, she's not just looking after the interest of her own self, but she's also looking after the office of the presidency, which is...
I don't know that I agree with that.
Why?
Because you wouldn't take an untested rifle into battle. An untested protection is no protection at all. And I get that, like, it's a hot button issue, right, with the gay rights stuff, and that maybe a court that isn't as... you know, dedicated to their job as she is to the presidency might take sides on that. And the hot button issue of gay rights might not be the right challenge to make, but you have to challenge it. You have to get concrete information on what this executive privilege will withstand. Because if you don't, it's no protection at all.
I can see that point, but I've often heard a lot of lawyers say that bad case makes for bad law. So it's like, I think in you're right. I would rather have something tested, a legal theory that's tested. But like, if I'm testing a legal theory on the flimsiest of pretext, I think that's different than like, hey, I don't want to play this tape because it actually has our invasion plans for XYZ to intervene in, sure, you know, 1, 2, 3 and now this is going to get. Yeah. What? And I think like, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing is I think that the well, there's a lot of unfortunate things about the founding of this country. One of them was that the founding fathers did not conceive of an era in which a branch of the government would not zealously protect its look after its own interests and its own protections. And I think a lot of, you know, what's wrong with America is that we have essentially we've got like the worst of all the different worlds. We've got like a lot of this stuff that like it calcifies and supports not changing things. But we've gotten rid of all of the like checks and balances within the different government parties, because Congress especially has been completely lax about the executive taking over more and more and more of its prerogatives. Mm-hmm. To where like, yeah, I mean, we're now in a situation where it seems like we could very easily within a generation slide to some kind of totalitarian dictatorship, just because all, you know, like you'd have to push back over 50, 60 years of power grab by executive branch. But I thought it was interesting in a West Wing kind of way, them having that conversation.
Yeah, I can see the argument, especially given the particular issue that they'd be testing it over. So,
yeah.
But I generally, like, my idea is, hey, I don't want to go into battle with an untested rifle.
And kudos to everyone that picked up on the significance of the tapes. The fact that the like you know, the Watergate stuff went down slightly differently in this universe than others. The tapes are still there. They're able to be subpoenaed. And it's going to be a big problem for Larry and Ellen here. And also, like, I thought Larry was fairly courageous in falling on a sword to protect her pregnancy. You know, he's going to take and also I it also made me think about the sexism that would come hand in hand with any the first gentleman, whatever first gentleman we ever have. I don't care if it's in 2024 or 1994, they're just going to face all this, you know, yuck sexism coming from the other direction. Mm-hmm. When it happens, and poor Larry, a gay man, is going to get it treble. So
yeah
he's really, and I was thinking, oh my God, every time she looks at the picture of the, like, oh my God, imagine you're a boy growing up in mid-90s America, and your dad is the first gentleman and he's gay, and you're, you know, like, it's just tragic. Not because he's gay, but because of the way the world is set up, mm-hmm, that's going to make all that being just so much harder in his position.
And I think he absolutely makes the right call here. It is the right move to confess and take the blame. He does need to make this right. It was his fault. I kind of agree with Ellen. Like, in the current climate, you needed to keep this in your pants for 4 years and you couldn't even do it. And so it's his sword to fall on here.
I wish we could A/B test his history to see what would happen if Bill Clinton just had come clean and been like, you know what? I did fuck up. I fucked up in this area. There's been a consistent weakness of mine. I don't think it affects my governance in any other way, but I did do this. I did betray my wife to the extent I also think behind the scenes, Hillary and Bill were exactly like this.
Probably. Yeah.
Like, I don't think Hillary was like crying in a corner, but, oh, could you cheat? I think it's like, God damn it, Bill. What the fuck? What are we going to do? How much can we get away with? What can? No, I absolutely think that this was. And they just came to different answers.
The Big Macs are not enough for you. God damn it, Bill. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you left all this behind at the Arkansas governor house. God damn. We don't have the entire Arkansas state fucking police looking after you anymore. Like, come on.
And I think it's, you know, ironic in the best kind of way, that Larry's relationship is the thing that's going to bring Ellen down when Ellen has given up so many of those. For the presidency to get to where she is.
Yeah.
It's like, it's tragic, right?
Yeah, all around.
From Larry's side. But yeah, let's move back over to Elaida. She lays out the case for Margot being the only option to Bill. And Bill agrees with her conclusion and tells her, you got to go to the FBI. But Elaida is reluctant, is like an understatement here because of what they did to her father.
But what is she? What did she expect was going to happen? Like, yeah, the FBI, if you give it to the quote unquote Justice Department, do you know what the Justice Department will do? They'll give it to the branch of government that's designed to investigate domestic, spying malfeasance. It's going to be the FBI. And right. I get it. I mean, that's the thing. It's like one of those things where it's like, I understand from like everyone's point of view here. But I also wonder, like, well, if Alita wasn't going to take it to this, what did she want? Does she want to like somehow isolate Margot at NASA so she can't give up more? What is the end game in her mind?
That might be what she might have wanted here is to find the culprit, pinpoint them, and take that information to Margot and let Margot handle it. And
so she was wanting to be talked out of. She was wanting to overlook something that Bill could see and be like, oh, it's actually not Margot, so she could still.
Yeah, take that info to Margot and let her handle it. But oops, it's Margot, so she has no choice but to do it herself. And that's interesting. The sticking point.
Okay.
I mean, she organically worked her way into this pickle, right?
Right.
It wasn't. She realized something from day one and said, eventually I'm going to have to go to the FBI with this. And that's a big problem for me personally. It was just like, something's weird here. Let me investigate. Oh, no, something's really weird here. Let me keep going. And then she got stuck in this. So,
yeah,
she's in a rock and a hard place here, personally. And then Karen comes to Dev with a plan to sell the Phoenix to NASA. He thinks it's crazy, but Karen has already floated the idea to NASA, and they responded positively. Dev is pissed for a couple of reasons, because the PR is going to look bad, and also he's not ready to throw in the towel, and he tells her to have a little faith. The numbers don't always tell the whole story.
I don't understand what he thinks is going to happen. Bigger people than him have been pushed out of, you know, these seats before. And ultimately, once you lose the faith of the board, it's you're done. You know, if you're a publicly traded company, you got nothing left to do.
Huh.
I wonder if the story is that he's just, because to me, it's like the story is Dev's going to win. That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, and I'm liking Dev a lot more in this episode, right? I'm believing in him. But it's tough because Dev, as evidenced in the crisis that they had on Mars, where he came up with the great idea to, you know, cave in the lava tube.
Yeah,
he takes his time to process this stuff and comes up with interesting, innovative solutions to things. Whereas the board is just looking at this like, today, fuck, we need to do something because our stock tank.
Yeah.
Our stock price is tanking.
Yeah,
Latch onto the first solution that seems viable. And Dev is processing things, you know? He might come up with something.
How do we feel about Karen? Because that's the thing. It's like, to me, it's like, well, Dev has to win, but maybe he doesn't, because it seems like the show wants to put Karen in this seat, which is a more interesting thing for the show's future, I think.
Yeah.
But like, how does Karen turn this around? Because Karen's looked at the numbers and she's seeing, you know, and when I say turn things around, I think like Helio still being invested in not just the moon mining, lunar mining, but like, you know, deep space exploration. Like what Dev said at the very beginning, he wants to open up the moons of Saturn and Jupiter and the asteroid belt. This Mars was just a first step in this bold thing. How does she get that back on track?
I don't know, because if she doesn't, she's not going to be satisfied with being the CEO of this company, right? Like it was never her dream to continue the legacy of a company of a mining company. She wants to build something from the ground up is what she said.
Yeah.
So,
and if she gets this seat and Dev's an advisor and she just like, well, I'm just going to listen to Dev, everything that Dev wants to do, then guess what? She'll get fired and they'll hire somebody else. So maybe the naysaying engineer, it's always shit talking whatever thing is up for public debate, you know, like that's a person that's not going to push the button about going to Mars. Yeah, I wonder where
I almost expect her to turn it down. You know, it's not her dream. It's not what she loves doing. Selling the Phoenix is probably the best idea, but it needs to be coupled with another idea on how to colonize Mars and do it successfully, you know, profitably. So maybe she goes there, but if she can't walk that middle path, I feel like she doesn't take the job or she quits.
I'm glad that it seems unlikely that we're going to have another time jump, at least in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, we have a crisis. I don't think that you can jump away from the crisis. You know, they don't typically do that in this show. Kelly is a crisis, them getting off. So I think we're going to see Dev's reaction and what he says and the board says and what, you know, assuming Karen takes over, like, you know, what her statement's going to be. You know, mm-hmm. the mission statement for the company. I'm glad, because I don't want to just next season. It's 2005 and Karen is the undisputed master of this company and they've yada yada over all that.
No, they'll set us up for another 10-year jump that will make sense.
Sounds like the show's committing to old woman Karen, though. I'm not sure in a way that I'm not sure anyone else they're committing to. Like, I think Ed could die. Karen?
Oh yeah, okay, yes.
Yeah. Like, I think they're divesting themselves from all the old the previous generation, and it's gonna be leaning forward, you know, on some of the younger people that they've established. Like, Will's gonna be a big part, I'm sure. Kelly and Danny. Although Danny, mm-hmm. how the hell? That's one thing I'm super interested after that. Like, when we do our wrap ups, like, where do we think this show is going in the future? Because they do have a little bit of like cast turnover problem, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see. I think Aleda, you know, is a natural choice for the director. Sure. We'll see. See how it goes.
I can see some of the positions, but they're going to have to definitely bring a lot of younger people along to have as big a cast as they have.
Yeah. Because half of the people right now are Russians who I guess we could see more on Mars.
It's true,
but probably not a lot on Earth, because we haven't to date seen a lot of Russian activity on Earth.
Maybe Russia and the United States dip off of Mars and it's North Korea. North Korea that brings forth the brave new future.
All their astronauts here. Get shot to death on Mars and they just decide, you know what? It's not worth it.
Yeah.
All right. An essential system on the MSAM has been destroyed. It's their rendezvous radar system, which allows them to dock with the Phoenix. There seems to be no replacement, but it turns out that, and I'm going to cover all the stuff to deal with this system here. It turns out the Russians have 5 on the planet from sampler probes, but the closest is 1,500 kilometers away from Happy Valley. The trip would take a month. Kelly can't wait that long for some reason. However, the North Koreans have a probe with the same technology, much closer. And Danielle and the Russian commander, I still don't know his fucking name, decide to go after
him. Me either.
Does he have a name?
He's the Soviet commander in my notes, the Soviet Mars commander.
I just looked it up. His name is Grigori.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
So my understanding, this is an automated docking module.
Yeah.
And that since Helios is a private company, they were using either best of breed or cheapest technology. And apparently the Russians were selling this to everybody and the Americans weren't. So they've got a Russian automated docking system that's controlling their spacecraft. Mm-hmm. Do you find it hard to believe that Ed Baldwin would not have a manual backup for docking the Popeye to another spacecraft, and that this would be within the realm of his physical capabilities to manually dock a spacecraft to another spacecraft?
Yeah.
Second question. This thing for sure has a fucking airlock on it. Is it really impossible to get within, like, I don't know, 10 meters of the spacecraft? Put an astronaut in a thing, throw a cable. Like, you're, I mean, there's so many options that you could do to get the spare that's on the Phoenix. By the way, with one fucking MSAM, why is the spares on fucking Phoenix? This seems like a lot of, and I, like I said, I've overlooked this up to this point, but now it's starting to get the cascading effects. Like, it seems crazy to only have one MSAM on a ship that large, but you know what? There's lots of single points of failure in spaceflight. Delta V is a thing. There's only so much you got, and you got to make hard fucking choices. If something happened to lunar ascent module, the astronauts on the moon were fucked. They're just going to die there. So like, I get it, but like, some of this stuff is like, you're carrying spares, but why in the main spacecraft? Isn't the primary hazard of this thing breaking down on Mars?
Sure.
There's no ability for the larger craft to soft land anything on Mars. It's like, that seems fucking crazy. And this, I don't know why.
Is this Cowboy Ed versus Danielle? Because later in a scene, Danielle wants to take like extra solar cells or whatever, battery cells for their rover.
Right.
And then the Russian commander, Grigori, questions it. He's like, what the hell, why are we carrying all this extra weight? She's like, well, shit breaks. So it could be like Cowboy Ed, you know, didn't consider all these possibilities, whereas Danielle is.
Maybe. I just wish there was a scene where NASA and Russia were talking about like why they can't do, like, because there might be obvious engineering things where these would be problems, but I felt like the show in previous history would like walk, you know, like, why can't you do the obvious thing? Like, this obviously has an airlock. And I question, maybe it didn't. But they showed Danny in the cockpit and his coworker say she's going to go back to the, and she gets in this thing and shuts it. That's got to be an airlock. Mm-hmm. You know, because Danny's not getting into like, hold on, let me get in my spacesuit because you're going to fucking expose me to the near vacuum of Mars. Uh-huh. So it's got an airlock. Why can't they? Why can't they spacewalk it out? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it would definitely be risky, dangerous.
Exposed, they're within deadly cable range if they're getting in there without a auto docker. I don't
sure,
know.
Little, sure, yeah, the cable's whipping around. Like,
it's like a fucking like landing on Medusa's head. God damn it. Have you not learned not to talk about that woman's hair, Jim?
No, the daughter is what I was going for. What is their daughter? Willow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, not Jada. You said Willow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so my
apologies, Will. I don't want you to come smack me.
Yeah, your daughter's on record for whipping her hair back and forth. Yes. So you can't get mad at us for that.
Yeah, you're right. There might be a way to do this, but clearly the show does not want that way to be explored.
This is cool too. Again, like going and in fact, maybe they say these are all plausible, but like, hey, you know what? Let's just walk 80 miles or let's rove 90 miles and get one is laying on the surface first.
Great way to bring back the North Koreans. And I'm thinking, they have been keeping that on the back burner for a reason. And
yep.
Boy, was I wrong about the reason.
Yep.
But I don't know. I like scenes like this where they're, you know, discussing all the possibilities and working through. And it's very much like the Ellen scene, right? With Larry, where they're working through the possibilities.
Yep.
It's just the political possibilities.
Yeah, I agree.
And legal possibilities. So all that is cool. And then we come to a scene where Bill has called a woman at the FBI to Elaida's dismay, but they meet with her anyway. And she says all the right things, and Elaida tells her to fuck off. The FBI apparently is going to pursue this case regardless, whether she helps them or not.
Of course they will.
Obviously, yeah. And then on her way out, she tells Bill, you're dead to me. I sense another big moment building for them, honestly.
It's brutal. I hope do you think she'll bring up in her testifying without being asked that he pissed his pants one time in Mission Control?
Sure.
just for sheer bloody-mindedness. Let the record. I want to get it out on record. This man's nickname was Peanut. Can you explain why he was? I mean, once Bill went to the FBI, which again he should have, there's no fucking way the FBI is like, well, there's credible evidence of a Russian corruption at the highest levels of a national space agency. We'll let that go. We won't investigate that because Elaida feels really strongly about it
here. You know, except for Elaida, who is doing the right thing for her character, and I still love that.
And we see in the next scene, like, this isn't, she's got genuine, she cares about this a lot. This is something that she's got a lot of emotion and loyalty tied to. I mean, she's turned down personally enriching herself quite a bit for her loyalty to Margot.
And then she's been betrayed by literally every single person and institution she's ever come in contact with. She's betrayed by her mentor, Margot. She's betrayed by Bill by calling the FBI. Mm-hmm. She's betrayed by the FBI for what they did to her father. Like,
right.
And
which if you guys don't remember, in season one, there was that slimy investigation. God, who played the investigator too? I remember him being like a real punchable face asshole.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh, was it the guy that collected data? The collector and Star Trek: The Next Generation. Anyway, they did this investigation about who, you know, what, where the leaks were coming from in NASA, and they pinned they pinned everything on the poor immigrant janitor, which is how he got deported and why. I mean, that's why it's not just that she's mad about her dad. Like, that's why she lived a homeless, desperate existence, why she got fucking shot in the shoulder. She's got all that scarring and stuff from shotgun. Like, there's a lot. It's not just like, oh, the FBI is mean to my dad, or like her family experienced severe consequences because of this stuff.
And all this betrayal is on top of the fact that her father has the beginnings or maybe the middle stages here of dementia. Yeah. And she can't even turn to him for comfort. And when she does, she's disappointed yet again because he doesn't realize who he's talking to. It's
blow.
Incredibly sad. Like her situation is just brutal in this moment. And I don't fault her for any of the stuff she's doing. It sucks what she's doing to Bill, because Bill is an innocent in this and she brought him into it. And what did she expect? But like, she comes by it honestly. It's like single person and every single thing in her life has conspired to push her to this point, and it sucks. for her.
Yeah, that scene where she's tearing apart her yarn conspiracy theory, and he comes out and starts calling her by his wife's name, and
yeah,
and like it's just it's a lot.
Yeah. And I do feel like they're setting up another big moment, like I said, for her and Bill later on to reconcile. When she can, you know, get her head on a little straighter, hopefully have a win or two, and then realize that
this is
not the way to go. But
it might wait for next season, though. Because they're both poised to be the heads of their respective space agencies, and they might have a Russian-American moment where they have to come together and work and put all this behind them. Because like I can't imagine her cooling off and being forced to testify against her boss is going to. And I think that there is going to be a time jump next episode. If I were to guess, roughly 45 to 60 minutes is going to be wrapping up the issues. And then you're going to have a time jump because it's going to take time for the FBI to investigate. There's going to be probably congressional hearings. There's going to be the fallout from the presidential shit. They need to jump forward to get to a point in, like, I don't know, 96 or 97 that they can throw the ball forward another decade. That's my guess.
I can see it. All right, let's go over to Danielle and Grigori preparing for the road trip. Phoenix sends down the drilling accident report, and it claims operator error, but blames Nick. And Danny vociferously calls bullshit. He's getting over defensive.
I mean, I think
this makes sense.
He's appropriately outraged, and it's also amplified because he knows the real culprit.
But the way he voices it, like you compare it to how everybody else in the room is reacting, and he is clearly overreacting as compared to everyone else. So
he's overreacting for his position. I guess that's the thing. It's like a normal human. He's having a normal human reaction, but we need better from our astronauts in life and death situations. Like they have to have the kind of inhuman ability to clamp that shit down and still function.
And he's overreacting compared to everyone else because he's the guilty party in this scenario, right?
All
he's
that shame
all
and
this
guilt
is coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. Is multiplying that. And everyone's worried because we need Danny on mission and on task. It seems like he has been for the last few months because he's had that, like nose to the grindstone anymore. You don't have time to think about shit. You got to just do. And now what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Because regardless, like if he makes it off of Mars, he's going to have a long trip home to think.
Sure. Months and months.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one of the board members who I think is a co-founder of Helios.
He's the one from the very first episode that discovered the secret of fusion with Dev.
Okay. That makes sense.
I think his name's Larry, but
they're going to talk about them being at MIT together and stuff. So that makes sense. He visits Karen to talk about selling the Phoenix, and he likes the idea. And he talks with her briefly about how brilliant Dev is and how Helios started, but how Dev has changed over the years. And he also says, hey, we're firing Dev as CEO, and we'd like you to take his place. I liked getting a little more, information on Dev, because I feel like I'm getting a better handle on who he is. And he mostly comes off as the guy that I wanted him to be early on when we met him, when he was saying all the right things.
Yeah.
Just pressed into the shape he's in by the pressures of having a board who's concerned with the stock price and all that stuff.
And on the other hand, being concerned that he's been swallowed alive by his own myth. I was thinking when they're having this conversation about, like, in the old Roman days when they'd throw a Roman general a triumph, which is a celebration of how fucking awesome you are. Legend goes that they would pay an underling to be on the chariot with the general as he's riding through, and people are throwing, flowers and thousands of people, and he's going through this procession, and they'd whisper into his ear, one day you're going to die, just to keep the guy grounded. Like, you are still a man, you are immortal, you ain't shit, memento mori, motherfucker. And you look around at some of the billionaire class that we got, if you know anything about Roman history, that shit wasn't airtight and didn't exactly keep people from doing silly shit.
What's
but
the purpose?
They don't even try
throwing a triumph if you're just undermining it. Why not just not throw the triumph?
You know, there's a lot of philosophy, stoicism, that, like, you know, like, there's kind of state religion was all about the, like, you know, being able to keeping the balance between extremes. And there's something to that. But, like, I think it's interesting because, like, this guy, he is the person most responsible for solving the humanity's energy problems forever. Sure. Essentially forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have that, like, huge win in a certain domain, I think it's natural for that to go to your head and you start thinking you can solve every problem. And if you, yeah, like I said, if you look at the billionaire class that's active in the scene today, you see a whole lot of that fucking hubris. And it needs to be checked. So it's like I'm in this situation where it's like I am rooting for Dev to get to Mars, but I also see his partner's point that this guy also could get single-minded and maniacal in pursuing a dream, to good or ill. And what? How do you keep a check on that? Apparently, you replace him with Karen.
Yeah. We'll see. Then we go over to Ellen telling Larry that he doesn't have to throw himself under the bus, but he insists that he needs to. And it doesn't sit well with her. She's looking around her office, pondering a lot of stuff. You know, she measures up to these presidents, if she can let her family break up, all kinds of stuff. The next day, the press conference, just before Larry can come out to the press, Ellen takes the mic and outs herself instead. And let's just keep on this train. The news reacts, and Will apparently gets a Presidential Medal of Freedom. And then Roland tells him how he really feels about him after some sober thought over the last 5 months.
Yeah. What do you think she was thinking of? Because I thought, like, you know, she sees, like, George Washington, the first president. He didn't even, I don't think, was represented by a party. He was just the fucking president of the United States. You see Lincoln, who is, for what, you know, whatever it's worth, he's a Republican that almost everyone in the country to this day says is one of the very best presidents of our time. Both those men famous for their personal integrity and their refusal to tell politically expedient lies, although that's probably not true for either of those gentlemen. Certainly, from what I've seen of late, you know, Lincoln and what I know, that they're not above, you know, twisting arms and doing stuff to get things done politically. Sure. But then in the middle of them all is Nixon,
right?
Which
is different in the show than he is in our timeline,
but not
at least publicly, but not totally.
But also, you know, even in this timeline is kind of, I think, known for more of his dirty tricks and his mendacity and
it's slightly different, but I think the sentiment is the same.
And I think that's like so that's her, like, you know, the weight of the office weighing on her, like, how is history going to judge her? And then they go to the personal, where she looks and it's like, you know, what kind of example do I want to set for my family? Do I want to sacrifice my husband? Again, Larry's her sham husband, but they've been doing this for so long that there's more real about their relationship than a lot of people's. Like, they've got a lot of love for each other. They've always had each other's backs. They know each other's deepest, darkest secrets. They've supported each other thick and thin. They have a child. There's a lot of love there. Is she going to throw him under the bus to preserve her political legacy?
And this is, you can extend this not to just her family, but to all the families out there, right, who are living under these conditions. All the families who have to hide their true identities because they're gay, and living a life that, they don't want to be living. I don't know how this is going to play out, but I feel like this is the right call, personally.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought that was good. And I thought the way she, like, you know, they spent a good minute of her just kind of in the Oval Office struggling with this and, you know, her considering and her pondering, like, it felt like momentous in a real way, all by herself. There's no Larry there. There's no advisors. It's just her wrestling with how she wants to view. And then they pivot to Larry calling his press conference, and God, I thought this was a bit much. Like, Larry's going out there full flop sweating. He's like the kid that goes to the top of the high dive tower at the town pool and is stuck up there. And everybody's like, just fucking jump or get that. And he's like, and she, like, that's going on for an awkward amount of time. And then she comes and saves him and gives this speech where she kind of starts off political and like how like all of her accomplishments, but then she talks about her failures and how she's failed to, you know, she's failed to live up to her own standards. She's lied to the American people. She's failed to protect some of its most vulnerable population. I thought once she took the podium, I thought it got really good. And going around to like, you know, Pam's perspective and Margot's perspective, they even get Dick Gephardt in there and him like, oh, God damn it, I've been foiled. Although,
yeah. Has he?
Well, I got to say, like, I do wish we could A-B test what would happen if Clinton had just come out and it just been like, yeah, I did take advantage of this young woman. I did, you know, betray at least my marriage oath. And that's been a problem. I would like, because like, I do feel like Americans, and I don't know if it's different now, but like, we used to have a hard time hating people that just were like honestly human, you know, and it sincerely asked for forgiveness and, you know, wanted to kind of like move. Like we still like, oh, my God, people get so many chances in this country. Even if you don't do the right thing, if you just kind of like lay low for a while and then do something that makes people smile, you can get back in everybody's good graces. And, you know, depending on how typically it's American you look and all that, it's easier or harder. But I won't think it would be crazy if this blows over because she did do the right thing. Although I also won't think it crazy if this ends her political career either.
Right, right. I find it hard to imagine she'll get reelected. I think this might be the end of her presidency in 2 years, but not right now. I don't think like there's impeachment on the table. Honesty takes it off the table.
Well, the thing is they could still, if they want to be bloody minded, they could definitely indict Larry.
Yeah,
they can get Larry for perjury. I don't think because she didn't try to obstruct shit. As soon as like from their perspective, as soon as they brought it to her attention, she came clean about. Yeah. So like politically, I don't know what Gephardt does, especially since he's a Democrat. And I don't know. I don't think they've done a very good job of showing that the Democrats have completely switched polls. They've definitely shown that the Democrats are leading a Fox News outfit and they are kind of like they've taken the gadfly public position. But like, in the 90s, it was always the liberal wing of the Democratic Party that was carrying the torch for gay rights more than anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it's entirely possible, but she's a Republican. So, how does Dick Gephardt push this home when, like, the scandal is, well, the president's secret gay? You know, does that put him...
I think it's really possible.
That's what I was thinking, too.
This does take his... It takes the danger away from losing NASA to Congress, right? And control that budget to Congress, at least for the next 2 years. But yeah, Larry is still on the chopping block. I don't think there's any way.
Wouldn't it be wise?
Because it's the perjury thing.
It might be that they're going towards something that this is all moot point anyway. Because if Margot goes down as arch Soviet spy, this bill goes through in a heartbeat. We gave this woman all this power, all this authority, all this budget, and she betrayed us. Like, and Ellen falls on the biggest.
Right? Yeah,
I think that's an argument that will work. So he is temporarily Stein, but unless this just never comes out about Margot, I can't. Like, if Dick Gephardt can't like fucking make hay out of this, then I don't know.
Yeah, and if the FBI can't connect the dots when Alita herself.
Right.
Has connected them in a garage with yarn.
Even if she refuses to cooperate, there's no fucking way.
Yeah, they'll get other very smart people at NASA to cooperate and tell them what all this shit means. They have their methods, certainly.
Yeah.
So you're right. It only postpones the problem. Maybe it postpones it 2 years. Maybe it is not, you know, a deal for Ellen's presidency to deal with at this point, because like. Those investigations take a while, you know, FBI takes their sweet time coming to their conclusions, probably for good reason.
Yeah. So, especially stuff that has a potential political impact or involves like high ranking. Yeah, they have to be circumspect.
You don't want to get that wrong.
You don't want to rush to. Yeah. Judgment for sure.
Yeah. Maybe it's not something we'll deal with the direct fallout this season of. All right. Ed finds Kelly passed out on the floor. It's kind of like. During the scene. Oh, we didn't talk about the stuff with Will and Roland. I said it's the highlight of the episode for me. It absolutely was. When he says, "You're a brave man and I'm honored to be your friend," I got choked up in this moment. Halfway or partially because of Will's reaction, like mostly because of Will's reaction. He's so good in this scene. And yeah, I just really love that moment.
And I was thinking, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It just shows like this camaraderie that they built over the last 5 months, you know, and Roland's had another 5 months to live side by side with Will and see that he's not getting fucking AIDS from breathing the same air as this man. Right. And so like, he starts to soften on it. And I think like there was an apology that needed to happen. And this is the best kind of apology.
And I think it's also realistic that like, I think it's no strange thing that like the civil rights were largely kicked off there, like in the immediate aftermath of World War II and the Korean War, and continued through the Vietnam War, because it's just very hard to hate a person that you're side by side in a foxhole with.
Yeah.
You know, you can come from the shittiest part of the country and you just hate black folk. But then, you know, you go into battle and you save each other a couple of times. You got to grudgingly admit that they're kind of all right. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, yeah, these months of like loss and grief and deprivation and you know, daily heroics just to stay alive. Even if Roland was a particularly bloody minded person to begin with, which I never painted him out to be that way, it would be very hard for him to like come through this and still hate Will. But I still love, like, I mean, from Will's perspective, I was thinking when I rewatched this, you know, this is a guy who's just a month away from hopefully blasting off this planet and going back and being court-martialed and stripped of all of his military honors and probably be drummed out of NASA. And you would never know it. He's bopping with everybody. He's singing, you know, to the How Bizarre. But then like this sudden reversal, you got to think that he's had to have like mentally toughened himself up to that. And now, like on the eve of their departure, he finds out that not only is that not going to happen, he's going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom for it.
Yeah.
As a patriot, I can't even imagine as a patriotic like astronaut like what that reversal would mean. And that the thing is like the way he portrayed just being overcome by everything, and the whole base coming together for it, I thought was great.
Uh-huh. That's excellent. When another astronaut whose name I don't know says, "All right, time to drink." It's like, great. That's awesome. All right. And the final scene is Ed finding Kelly passed out on the floor, and he calls the doctor in. And Happy Valley calls Danielle and the rover to tell them to get back with the rendezvous hardware ASAP because Kelly's in trouble. And they arrive at the North Korean probe to find a North Korean with a gun waiting for them and pointing it at them. Wow.
Yeah, no, when Danielle saw the boot prints, I felt like I was having a stroke. Yeah. Did you? Like, it felt like my head almost swam watching this TV show.
Yeah, because there's one conclusion you can draw from boot prints in this location, and it's that there was a man on the unmanned North Korean probes that they were sending, and it was a suicide mission, and all of the people who had been calling it in the last 3 weeks were absolutely right.
You know, I was just thinking, I kind of want to go back and do a screen comparison. I'm almost wondering if that boot we saw on Mars at the beginning of last year was actually this guy's North Korean boot. I wonder if it's because it looks like it's vaguely cosmonautish, and that makes sense.
But like,
I wonder if there's a distinctive enough where they actually this is something that they kind of hinted at.
Could be.
Yeah, it's wild. Kelly, so like this is in the background, but the Russian doctors diagnosed her with preeclampsia, which is a condition that can afflict pregnant women past her 20th week of pregnancy. And it's characterized by high blood pressure, retention of protein, decreased liver and kidney function, and can risk the health of the mother, but also can lead to a preterm delivery. And in fact, the treatment for severe preeclampsia is to induce early labor so you can get that kid out there. Because otherwise the mother will eventually... I know. There, I don't know if NASA can cobble one together with, you know, saran wrap and duct tape, but they're going to have a premature birth, it seems like. And if they don't, as this condition progresses to eclampsia, she'll start having seizures and eventually could die herself, certainly put the child at risk. So this is a...
This is a high risk birth suddenly that they're going to have to deal with on top of everything else. So my God, the pressure.
Time is of the essence, and they've just run into a brick wall as far as timing. Like, how are they going to communicate to this scared North Korean with a gun that they are on a desperate mission to get a piece of his ship and bring it back to save the life of one of their pregnant astronauts? There's no way to communicate that, right?
And it's such on another watch, what Ed said about, like, you know, kind of like, well, it's better to beg forgiveness and ask permission. Well, now they got a man with a gun that they're going to need to get permission to take a piece of his ship off. Right. And the other thing is, like, all this shit. So this is why, as silly as this is, it all layers on nicely, because I couldn't help but think, as soon as I saw that guy holding a shaky gun, the last time I saw two people on a cosmological body didn't speaking the language in a panicky, nervous situation with guns. It was one of the most horrific scenes. Yeah. So, like, what happens if Danielle and this Grigory guy get just shot to death on the Martian surface? Like, they're fucked.
Yeah. I mean,
which maybe we floated this idea. What if no one makes it back from Mars? They just
it's possible. Yeah,
it's the fucking solar system's graveyard, man.
No, they I'm hoping they're like on their radios. So their suits probably don't have transmitters strong enough to transmit 90 kilometers back to Happy Valley. Right. That was probably the rover.
But their rover probably would do a repeater thing. Right.
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. Yeah. That would be the smart thing. So they need to be on the radios right now telling Happy Valley what's happening here. Because if they get shot to death before they can communicate that,
and they'll never know.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to send another crew out, but I don't think they have another rover. So maybe they can't.
I think they do, because they said they're not risking sending both. I think they have more than one.
Okay. So they'd have to send another mission out here who would get ambushed by the same dude.
Again, yeah. And do they have... I wonder if they have weapons, because I think that maybe one of the lessons that both sides learned was that you shouldn't take weapons to a celestial body.
Yeah. Maybe don't have gunfights on...
They left a white
planets
M16s at home, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
it's a bad situation. And it's a real pressure cooker here with Kelly's life and the baby's life on the line. And Ed back there, like, looking at his watch, I'm sure, going, but when the fuck are they going to get back here?
And but the thing
the cowboy,
is,
right? Ed's the fucking cowboy that they're worried about. I imagine he's going to take some crazy risk here. And I don't know if it'll pay off.
I just don't. Oh, God. Because I'm trying to play. It seems like it'd be a pretty easy thing to talk this guy into helping him. Because, like, I don't think he has any plans on getting out of there. He has been probably living in just squalid conditions, and they have a ticket home.
Sure.
But also, I still don't understand why. Oh, I wonder if his comms are down. And the reason that Korea has not taken credit is because they think he's dead. And it would be an embarrassment if they sent somebody there to land first and he died.
So that would make a lot of sense.
Because, like, that's the only thing that makes sense. Because, yeah, if Korea was able to land that and he survived, so he might have been cut off from contact. And he's kind of like one of those, you know, you've heard of those guys that, like, were fighting in the Philippines, like the Japanese guys that had no idea. They were living in caves and they had no other orders. And they're so dedicated to the emperor or whatever that they were, like, holding their post until they were relieved.
Like the 70s when they're still like, fighting back, thinking it's
One of these guys, they had to find his old commanding officer who happened to be alive and survived the fucking brutal slaughter of the Pacific and got him there to relieve him, because that's the only way he would stand down. It could be one of those situations, because there's a lot of similar dynamics in terms of how the North Korean people see the ruling class over there. They're seen as gods, so it could be. But then, you got to be. Yeah.
And you would think maybe it's not radio signals coming off of Mars from a North Korean communication.
That's the other thing I thought.
Helios would pick them up.
They would have picked it. Especially from 80 kilometers or 80 miles or kilometers away. That's not.
Or that Happy Valley would even. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's not, like I said, the situation might not be as insane as I think. It's just got to be a one in a million shot that even the North Koreans thought they failed on. But also, like, I think the history books are going to have to be changed that this motherfucker, whoever he is the first man on Mars.
Yeah.
And North Korea put him there. So
I don't think NASA is going to hide that.
No, I don't know how you can. It's unless they kill the guy. It's what a reversal.
God, I got to see the fallout from this, man. Next episode. Yeah. I'm salivating over here waiting for next episode. I just want to know what happens at this gunpoint scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing is now we're done recording this. We can watch the next one.
Yeah.
It's one of the advantages we have.
Before the feedback episode. That's a little scary.
Oh no, we do have to wait for the feedback. We got to wait till Wednesday for the feedback episode. Speaking of feedback, For All Mankind, FAM at baldmove.com is the where you want to send the feedback into us, because I know we'll have at least one more feedback episode. I'm not sure if we'll have another one before the show is over. Well, I know you guys will hear one this week, but I'm not sure if we're going to record another one in addition to that, or we'll just have an after the season kind of clearinghouse. But we will definitely have another one. FAM at baldmove.com is how you send in feedback to that. And other than that, we'll see how this North Korean standoff situation plays out in the supersized episode next week. Again, it's nearly 90 minutes long. Other than that, we'll see you then. And until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.